Hello and welcome to More or Less from the BBC World Service. We're your weekly guide to the numbers in the news and in life, and I'm Tim Harford. If I asked you what Shakespeare gave us, you might talk about his flair for language, descriptions that trip off the tongue, the nuance in his narratives, his insight into the human condition. But what does the most influential writer in the English language have to do with More or Less? Well, much, according to today's guest, Rob Eastaway, maths communicator and author of Much Ado About Numbers. Welcome back to More or Less, Rob. I think a lot of people would not associate Shakespeare with mathematics. They feel like they're different sides of the GCSE curriculum, so to speak. So what is the association between numbers and Shakespeare?
I don't think I would have expected to find any association between maths and Shakespeare until I started searching for maths words, because I was asked to do a session for a group of maths teachers at a conference in Stratford-upon-Avon, which is Shakespeare's birthplace.
Oh yeah, a few Shakespeare puns or something.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, the maths of love triangles, things like that. The initial word searches started delivering interesting little snippets, and I thought, there's a lot more to this, I'm going to start digging. Searching for the word mathematics, it does crop up two or three times, in association with music, because music was a mathematical subject in Shakespeare's time. There are all sorts of indirect mathematical references going on through Shakespeare's work, and I just, every time I picked at a strand, another bit of interesting maths history seemed to drop out.
I was very struck by the claim that Shakespeare might have been an accountant.
Yes, it is interesting that money features in almost every one of Shakespeare's plays. He also uses accounting terminology a lot. In fact, there's four of his sonnets that between them have about 15 different accounting words, not just reckoning, but also audit and profit.
Against that time, if ever that time come, when I shall see thee frown on my defects, when as thy love hath cast his utmost sum, called to that audit by advised respects.
Why would someone throw in all these accounting references as a metaphor for life, and not, for example, use naval terminology, which would be a more everyday kind of thing?
So he obviously knew something about accountancy, but even an accountant can get things wrong. We do like our fact-checking on More or Less. Could you give us some examples of things that Shakespeare just got flat wrong?
He was pretty casual about foreign currency. In his play Comedy of Errors, which is set in what's now Turkey, he uses Dutch guilders. He uses Italian check-ins in Pericles, which is set in Turkey, Portuguese crusados in Othello, which is in Venice, and so on. So lots of, it's a currency, it doesn't really matter which country it's in, our audience probably won't know anyway. But perhaps the biggest liberty he takes is in Timon of Athens, where he decides to choose talents as the unit of money. One talent was sort of equivalent to, I mean, depend on the era, but let's say 30 kilograms of silver. And in one scene, there's a messenger who tells Lucilius that Timon needs to borrow 5,500 talents.
I know his lordship is but merry with me. He cannot want 5,500 talents.
Which I worked out as equivalent of around 120 tons of silver, which is worth about 85 million in today's money.
85 million pounds is around $100 million.
You can ask your friends for all sorts of things, but I'm wondering who would lend any friend $100 million. It's asking quite a lot.
Is that an error? Is that carelessness? Or, I mean, is it deliberate? Is he basically just saying, oh, this is ridiculous? He's just asking for a ridiculous amount of money and everyone gets that message.
It's a very precise number, 5,500, maybe because 5,500 trips off the tongue. But maybe Shakespeare just making a point that this is an impossible sum and Timon is clearly doomed because he's never going to get it.
Yes. Well, on that theme, he loves his big numbers. Shakespeare loves to use big numbers.
He does. And there are hundreds of thousands in his work and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands.
I heard you say that you had rather refuse the offer of 100,000 crowns than Bolingbroke's return to England. adding withal, "How blessed this land would
be." And he says million a few times. You know, in classic More or Less, it's always good to ask, is this a big number? Well, in Shakespeare's time, 1,000 was a big number because there weren't many things that come in 1,000. You earned £100 a year. There were 200,000 people lived in London, but you'd never see them all together. So this sense of what thousands looks like and feels like, it is a big number. So when Shakespeare talks of 10,000 crowns as an amount of money, or 1,000 natural shocks that flesh is heir to in that famous to be or not to be speech, these are big numbers. And in many cases, he's just saying it for dramatic effect.
So what is the biggest number that you've found in the works of Shakespeare?
So it is an Ilian. It's in Romeo and Juliet and comes in a slightly surprising context because Romeo is having to flee because his life is under threat. And the friar says to him, "Don't worry, when you return, you'll be greeted with far more joy than you're feeling as you leave." So the question is, how much more joy will it be? And the answer is 2 million times more joy, except that's not the way Shakespeare says it. What he says instead is,
"Beg pardon of the prince, and call thee back with 200,000 times more joy than thou wentest forth in lamentation."
200,000 times more joy, which, of course, multiply those out, 20 times 100 times 1,000 is 2 million.
One more thing, Rob. It's not in your book, but it felt relevant. Sam Bankman-Fried, the disgraced crypto king, is quoted in Michael Lewis's book about him as basically dissing Shakespeare, and dissing Shakespeare using a kind of statistical argument. So that's interesting. He says that the Bayesian priors are pretty damning. Half the people born since 1600 have been born in the last 100 years. There are many, many more people who are literate now than were literate in Shakespeare's time. So on pure population weighting, if you want to kind of guess when the greatest writer who ever lived was writing, your guess would be, well, probably fairly recently. Certainly wouldn't be 400 years ago. I mean, obviously, Sam Bankman-Fried has been spectacularly wrong about one or two things, which is why he's now in prison. What do you reckon to this argument?
It's a really interesting argument. And if you think of writing plays, the ability to write a good play, as being like the ability to jump high, then it's just something you're born with, this innate ability. And since there's been so many people born since Shakespeare, you'd think not only can statistically many of them jump higher, that must mean there also must have been statistically, there must be around today lots more Shakespeares. So it can't have been him, he can't have been special. But I think there's various factors against that. First of all, how can we tell if there are Shakespeares around today? They're clearly not writing Shakespeare, because then it would just be a direct copy. So whatever they're doing has to be something equivalent to Shakespeare. But how do you measure that?
We're looking at you, Taylor Swift.
I was thinking maybe Lin-Manuel Miranda, as sort of Hamilton is the new Hamlet, you know. But how do we tell that someone's a Shakespeare? Very hard to compare. It's so subjective, so we can't tell if they're out there.
Thanks to Rob Eastaway, author of Much Ado About Numbers. That's it for More or Less this week, but if you've seen a number in the news or in a play that you think we should look at, our email is moreorless@bbc.co.uk. Until next time, goodbye.